You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Buzz! 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 Buzz!
Welcome into a final and first postseason edition of At the Buzzer, a Valfrey Report podcast. We are recording just days after the football season finale, and things are happening at an insanely fast rate. But as longtime listeners know, we're already moving on to basketball. So we're a basketball podcast now.
Yeah.
I'm basketball co-host Jack Barsh over there in, I would assume, sunny Denmark is basketball.
It was actually sunny today.
There you go.
It was the first, I think we've had two sunny days in the last month.
That's basketball co-host Sam, by the way.
I have personal news that I wanted to share at the beginning.
Personal news.
I joined a basketball team in Denmark.
Okay.
People are dog shit. Like, actual. They are so bad here.
This is not what I was expecting.
So, I am far and away the best player.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even funny. I think we were playing a game. It was like ones and twos in like the 25 or whatever. I think I had like 15 assists and like 8 points.
Average height of your opponents is
taller. It's about my height, which is like 6'6".
But they just suck, huh?
Humble brag. People here, like the ones who are like, oh yeah, I've only been playing for like a year and a half, and that's like a better player.
Oh, it's just boy. Crazy.
But the real personal news is that my basketball career may have lasted 2 games because I fucking destroyed my ankle today.
Oh,
I have never injured my ankle before. I am very injury prone, but I have never broken a bone and I have never hurt my ankle. And that's it. That was every other injury I've picked up. And I'm ruined. I'm icing and elevating right now because I heard like multiple pops and cracks in my ankle as I landed.
Oh boy.
Going for a rebound.
Go ahead.
I sat off the court until I lost all feeling in my like lower leg for a minute. And then and then I waited until it kind of went away. And then my team was so bad that I was like, all right, I'm hopping back in. And then I hit the game winning three sent to end it. And then I was like, okay, I'm done.
Look at you.
That might be the last shot I take for a few months. This sucks.
Multiple pops and cracks is not anything you ever want to hear.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I have to go to a doctor immediately, and I think my doctor here hates me. So
how would you even know? What, how do you know if your doctor hates you?
Because I went there and she was like super weird. Like she thought that I was, she asked if I was rich American because I said I couldn't afford physical therapy.
Oh boy.
And she's so weird. It's like she had like multiple microaggressions in like 10 minutes.
This story is not, there's nothing good for you coming out of this story. This is bad personal news.
But I balled out, so that's what matters.
Well, I guess that you hit the game winning three. That is the thing I'm talking about. That is nice.
Yeah.
You know, your personal news was mostly sad. Some personal news on the CU front. It's not personal. I just said that for the segue.
It's personal to us.
Is I guess it would be personally sad. But at the end of the year, as we all know, Colorado just lost to Utah on Friday, the Friday right after Thanksgiving. I hope everyone had a great holiday. And quickly now, on Sunday morning, the news was released that the offensive coordinator, Darren Shiverini, will not be returning to Boulder in any capacity. No wide receiver coach, no offensive coordinator in 2022. And, you know, some people react like Sam just did, which is, of course, very respectfully clapping. Some people, maybe, there were a surprising amount of people on Twitter that were being retweeted saying that this was a dumb move. I think it was dumb. Well, so yeah, to me, it was something that needed to be done. It was something that you can't average the lowest yards per game the CU's averaged since 1964, and you can't be shut out in four games and still retain your offensive coordinator. That's just something that can't happen. So I'm glad that the most obvious, easiest choice to make was the one that was made, because that often doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So
on the season, 22 offensive touchdowns. 12 games, 22 offensive touchdowns. Do you want to guess how many touchdowns Jaron Mangum scored for South Florida? My favorite game of the year.
It's going to be 14.
15.
Oh my God.
Do you want to play this game? I was going to play a game with you.
Yes, let's play the what is this? Our offense was worse than game.
Okay, so Jaron Mangum, God bless his soul. Wait, let me go back to his
former CU running back. That's why we're mentioning him. He transferred.
No. Sorry, not Jaron Mangum. Jarek Broussard.
Current CU. Way too talented.
Current CU running back. Last year's Pac-12 player of the year.
Offensively, yes.
661 yards.
Okay.
Do you want to guess the last time a CU leading rusher had that few yards?
2014, and it was Christian Powell.
Okay, yes. Excellent.
Yes! Woo!
How about that? That's probably an easier answer. Do you want to guess the time before that?
No. Was it like in the 90 and like 90 or 89 when everyone was just spreading it around?
No, it was much worse. It was for like a team that went 3-8.
2011?
No, 2000. Courtland Johnson.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was an injury year. Oh, God. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And we know he's good. That's the sad part. But anyways.
Yeah, we know he's good. He just had no room. Because sometimes you have to fire your offensive coordinator 9 games into the year. Or no. Fire the offensive line coach. All right. Now, when was the last time a leading receiver had less yards than Brady Russell's 307?
Oh, God.
That's so bad.
That's got to be an option here. 87.
Oh, no. It's not that bad. It is. It's much worse. Like,
okay.
Well, it's kind of an option year.
2000.
No. This is also the same year that someone had fewer passing yards than Brendan Lewis's 1,540.
Oof. It's not 2000?
Not 2000.
2006, Bernard Jackson?
It is 2006,
Bernard Jackson. Yes!
Do you want to guess who the leading receiver on that team was?
Derek McCoy.
No, I don't think he was even on that team.
No, I don't think he was either. And he went to the NFL. So
it's not Dusty Sprague.
And it's not. It can't be Scotty. Can't be Scotty McKnight.
Can't be Scotty. He wasn't there yet.
Oh, it's, man. It's, I have no idea. Okay. Is it Nick Casa? Ryan Greer? Greer. Oh, wow. Old school. Yeah, that's a tight end.
Yeah. So if you know who these people are, you qualify for the veterans discount. And wow. God bless your soul for sticking with you all these years, these 15 years.
So all of this just underscores what this season looked like offensively.
Fucking terrible.
Yep. And, you know, we said at the beginning of the year, I'm going to continue to say it. We are still a staunchly pro Brendan Lewis podcast. And I think he is like the least of the problems that we saw. I think he actually showed great potential. I think almost all the good plays we saw, at least through the air on offense, almost everything was him making things happen as opposed to the scheme making things happen. And I'm hoping to see him with a legitimate offense moving forward.
The scheme was actively hostile to him.
Yeah, it's whatever. It's the end of the year, and like we mentioned, I'm glad to see you acted quickly, acted decisively, made the right decision. That is what a Power 5 program should do when something needs to change. I believe them and Indiana were the first two schools to get out in front of the offensive coordinator carousel, which is great to hear. But I don't want to put, even though we just did, I don't want to put the cart before the horse. Let's go back and really quick talk about the Utah-CU game, which I believe went about as expected. I don't know if you got a chance to take a look at that, Sam.
I watched a little bit of it, and I kind of knew what I was getting into. It went exactly as I thought it would.
Right.
The highlight being Nico Reed with his 103-yard return.
And that's, yes, in relief of Brendan Rice.
That was kind of the only good thing that happened.
Well, yeah, the offense looked inept as ever. CU's dealing with so many injuries right now. I think a lot of them were holdout injuries, you know, holding them out to make sure they don't get hurt again. But no Nate Lamb on defense.
Why would you?
No Jack Lamb on defense.
Why would either team risk anything? Like, Utah already clinched the South.
They had the starters in there for longer than I expected. Yeah. And to be fair, CU semi had a game of it because the first pass, I think, Cameron Rising attempted was intercepted by Mark Perry. CU's offense promptly took their starting field position of the Utah 20 and went to 0 yards and kicked a field goal, which is awesome.
Hell yeah.
And then,
also known as the Iowa Hawkeyes offense.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, they would probably go back to Iowa Hawkeyes defense first. No. Hot take before we get sidetracked. I think Iowa's going to beat Michigan in the Big Ten championship.
So you're saying hot take before we get sidetracked, talking about CU on a CU podcast. Before we get sidetracked on that, let's real quick talk about how Iowa's going to beat Michigan. Yeah. Okay. I mean, you're wrong, but I appreciate the respect.
I know I'm wrong. I texted my cousin who's like an Iowa Hawkeyes like diehard. And he's like, oh, we're going to get absolutely fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
But, like, I think that Iowa is the most chaotic team. I think nothing makes sense with them. And I think it would be perfectly nonsensical for them to actually win. I think that'd be so funny.
It would be nonsensical. And, I mean, they've done something out of nothing before this year. No, they won't. And I think they actually make perfect sense. They are a team that has no offense and has an amazing defense. And I could see 10 wins in the Big Ten. I think that's the amount of sense you need to look into them. But
also okay. Speaking of Big Ten football.
Okay. Now we're doing tangent on the tangent. Awesome.
Nebraska finished the season 1-8 in Big Ten play with a point differential of 0.
Yeah, you're making that sound like a good thing. And I'm sick of people making that sound like a good thing. It's bad thing.
That's so funny. Do you know how hard you have to, like, that's so funny. Ugh.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, going back to something neither of us want to talk about, CU football.
CU football, we need to at least mention that there was a game on Friday that ended the season. So Cole Becker hits a 56-yarder, nailing it, going into halftime. And CU keeps it kind of close. Utah comes out swinging at the beginning of the second half. They score enough to put it away, and then they kind of cruise the rest of the time. Ends up being, I think, 28-13, so it's another cover for the Buffs. CU finished with less than 150 yards in total offense. beautiful. And they had no offensive touchdowns. Beautiful. Yeah, that's another feather in the cap of you cannot keep the offense as is. So yeah, Utah dominated as expected on the defensive side of the ball on Black Friday. CU performed admirably. I'm glad that no one quit. It looked like the team was still trying their best out there. Frankly, it looks like Carl Durrell is not, he has, these players are playing for this team, which is good. And that's a good sign moving forward. But CU finishes the season 4-8, shockingly 3-6 at in conference, which Sam, I'll have you know, has only ever happened three other times in the Pac-12. There's only three other seasons that CU's had at least three wins, conference wins. And Carl Durrell has two of those seasons, believe it or not. So 4-8.
Hang on a second. That can't be true. Really?
Yes. So it's 2016.
Oh, no. No, the McIntyre 5-7 years. Those didn't.
No.
They were like 3-0 in non-con or something.
Yeah.
Ooh.
2016, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. 2019, Mel Tucker, obviously. 2020 and 2021 are the four times the CU's won three conference games. And those three are at home this year. So shout out to the fans once again for packing Folsom, even if the team did not perform as they should have. So all in all, that's the end of the year. The change that was needed to make was the change that needed to be made was made. And I think hopefully there's some other changes on the way on the offensive side of the ball. I would prefer a wholesale fresh start. That's the most expensive option, but it's not my money. And just get a brand new, get someone who has a whole staff and let them run the thing. That's the end of the season is a 4-8 finish for the Buffaloes, pegged at 4.5 wins at the beginning of the year. So finished just under expectations, according to Vegas.
I'm okay waiting a year on Durrell, see what happens with the functional offensive coordinator.
Well, you better be, because Durrell's not getting fired. Yeah. He's been very publicly made available. I'm fine with that.
I mean, not that like you should be punting the coaching search a year, because like that's never good when like everybody kind of knows what's happening. But to be competing, and I'm offering you a great segue here, to be competing with the schools on the coaching search market. I would rather wait a year when things are a little more stable and you have a better pick of the lot.
Yes. This is the year to not hire a coach. Nebraska thought the same thing, and they extended Frost, who has a worse record than Carl Durrell, I will say. They extended Frost another year, said you get another one with a massively reduced buyout. And frankly, that strategy was proven correct by Michigan-Ohio State, because Jim Harbaugh had the same exact thing of – The athletic director saying, we're going to cut your pay. We're going to cut your buyout. You have to prove it. You basically need to prove it. And they went out there and proved it in a pretty big way. Finally got the Ohio State monkey off the back. This is not the year to be hiring a coach. CU does not have the money to pay this gigantic buyout regardless. Plus, as I just mentioned, Carl Durrell has had a modicum of conference play success, which has not happened at CU since they joined the Pac-12. So I think it's possible that this year was the floor, and it's also possible that 2020, in all its weirdness, was the ceiling. And I'm happy playing in that space until CU has the dough to pony up for something better.
Yeah, and also if the ceiling is kind of limited by Sam Noyer being an injured quarterback, like I'm okay with that.
But all of us to say, see, they're not going to fire Carl Durrell at all this year because everyone else is firing everyone else this year. And it has made for a wild coaching carousel. Always the best part of my year is signing day and coaching carousel, because it's all hope and optimism. There's no downside except for everyone getting screwed, which is also fun and super dramatic. So let's talk about the biggest screw job that was out there in the past 2 days, Sam.
The biggest screw job. Not the past 2 days. It is nice to look at this with the idea that Mel Tucker would have been leaving right now if he had kept up any success.
I would take a bowl game and then Mel Tucker leaving. I don't care about
that. But it's worth mentioning that Kenneth Walker had the season he had in what's that coach's name? Jay Johnson's offense.
Jay Johnson. God, what I wouldn't give.
Yeah, you were okay with him leaving, which was funny. And we all made fun of Michigan State for hiring him.
But how little we've, I mean, how quickly I forgot. Oh, no.
How quickly?
That's on me.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm okay with Schiff being here. Okay, but yes, the biggest screw job of the week.
Of the past 2 days is?
I'm not taking the LSU job.
Yeah.
Pause. Wait 10 minutes.
Let me stop you right there. I will not be LSU's next head coach. Little did we know, he just said asterisk quickly under the mic.
Yes. Technically true.
Technically true. We are, of course, we are talking about USC getting the mojo back. USC, Pac-12 supervillain, has poached their Darth Vader, Lincoln Riley, from Oklahoma Sooners. Straight up, just took him.
Mike Bone getting it done.
Mike Bone getting it done, getting a boner. There it is. The man who hired Dan Hawkins and then hired John Embry, the man who hired Jeff Fizdelic, has now made two of the most transformational hires, presumably, in the last 5 years, in Luke Fickell and Lincoln Riley. So I guess we should have given him more time. All of this to say, this is huge for the Pac-12, as anyone knows nationally. This is a pretty big – that's the big talking point, is this supposedly moribund league that was faltering further and further in the football landscape just went to the biggest Big 12 team, who's going to go to the SEC, and said, you want to be our coach? And the coach said yes, which is huge news. So Lincoln Riley is known for his high-powered offenses at Oklahoma. He coached 3 Heisman winners, I believe, and Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and Jalen Hurts. Didn't they all win the Heisman?
Jalen Hurts did not win the Heisman.
No, 2 Heisman winners then.
Third or fourth.
Okay. 2 yeah. Heisman winners. Oklahoma's been in the playoffs 3 times under Lincoln Riley's tenure. The Pac-12 has been to the playoffs twice, period. So right there, it shows you part of the reason why USC went and made this move. I don't know. He's going to be a nightmare to coach against. USC has never lost to Colorado. That will not change as long as Lincoln Riley is there. I feel pretty confident saying that. And it's an immediate stamp of approval, a big stamp saying USC's back. I cannot imagine a better fit, personally, for coaching, and a better rejuvenation after sticking with Clay Helton for 6 years. Yeah. Clay Helton
also Oklahoma's number one recruiting class. Lots of those guys are from LA, and lots of those guys are decommitting right now. I don't know where they're going to go, but we can check the 24/7 crystal ball.
Oh, I think you do know where they're going to go. Yes. As you mentioned, the number one quarterback in the class of 2023, not this currently signing class, but the one after, is Malachi Robertson, who sits at a balmy 37 minutes away from the USC campus down in Southern California, Los Angeles, committed to Lincoln Riley. Now Lincoln Riley can just drive his massive, whatever, his private plane. If he wants to fly for 5 minutes, his USC private plane down to Malachi's high school and say, don't move. I have NIL deals for you. Come play for me in USC. We are, I think, about to see a resurgence of the juggernaut that was the Pete Carroll USC years when LA was theirs, and California at writ large was theirs, and everyone else is fighting for scraps, which is terrifying. And, you know, it's a weird micro. This is terrible for CU because CU is now
– well.
Good luck recruiting in LA. Let's say,
well, okay. So first of all, we've been eating off those scraps for a minute.
Yes.
And LA was really just getting ravaged by like Clemson and Alabama
coming
in. Yeah, like Bryce Young going from, he would have never left. He would have been USC quarterback through and through in the 2000s.
Absolutely. Yes, but they're still going to be here. Going to be getting the people that USC either doesn't want or can't get to. And then that pushes everyone else down. Okay.
Maybe.
We'll see.
If the fruit's not to be had, I don't think they would try to go there. If they can't get the 5 stars, they'll go somewhere else.
So macro, I think this is actually pretty good for CU because this instantly puts way more TV dollars in the pockets of every Pac-12 school, in my opinion. I'm just a huge Lincoln Riley fan. I think he's exactly what USC needs. And I think they're going to be back in a big way pretty quickly. So when that happens, all the rising tide lifts all boats, right? Then you can have these pretty easily marketable Oregon versus USC flashes. If Oregon continues to recruit at a high level, you have, I would assume, these non-conference games like USC playing Alabama a few years back, suddenly raised, extra profile. If USC ends up making the college football playoff, that's going to be even more dollars. These are all good things for CU in terms of filling the coffers up. Now, you know, if you're counting USC as a loss before, it doesn't really change much in the win-loss column moving forward for CU, right? If you're already assuming that they're going to lose to USC because it's happened 15 times with no other alternative, then, hey, worst case scenario is you just lose by a lot, which, spoiler alert, CU does anyways a lot to USC.
I'm not afraid of Matt Barkley setting every single record.
Yeah, exactly right. Sam Darnold having 5 turnovers and still winning, even in CU's best year in the last 20 years. Yeah, you're not afraid. So, look, it's a gigantic meteor towards the Pac-12, and it just shakes a lot of things about college football. It's the biggest change this year so far because, as you mentioned, Sam, LSU was also going hard after Lincoln Riley. So, depending on what LSU does, this is the biggest hire of the year, and it's right in CU's backyard.
Yeah, and Mel Tucker is not going to LSU, which they've been double burned.
Well, yeah. So I can go on and on. I love coaching carousels. We can talk about all these changes. Another big
Pac-12. Take me round and round.
Well, so let's just start the Pac-12 first. Washington State kept Jake Dickert, their interim head coach, after blasting Washington in the Apple Cup on the road. Great. I think makes total sense. Nice and easy to get it over with. He was there. The players obviously loved playing for him, and they went 8-5, I believe, or 8-4, I believe, this year. 7-5.
Washington State.
Yeah. One of those two. Prove me right. Okay, prove me right.
Yeah. It's okay. Jake Dickert.
And
I could tell you the coach who got fired from Wazoo.
Oh. Right. Nick Rolovich. But you know, he was there. He's going to be okay. They obviously like playing for him. I think that was a nice and easy hire for them. Elsewhere in the, I don't know, whatever state Washington is, the rainy state, UW looks like they just hired their coach, Washington, who just fired Jimmy Lake after less than 2 full years of coaching because he was that bad. They went and hired Kalen DeBoer at Fresno State, who is one of my favorite coaches, and that is a nightmare.
What does he do?
He was the head coach of Fresno State, and he turned Jake Haner into a masterpiece this year. Former UW transfer. I have
no idea who that is.
Yeah, so he was Indiana's offensive coordinator a few years ago. Michael Penix was his pupil. He left to go take the Fresno State job, and now he's up at Washington. Before that, he's just known as a program guy. He was the head coach at the University of Sioux Falls, which is an NAIA school, and I believe they lost 3 games in 6 years that he was there, which it's NAIA. Yep. But he's probably the same talent as everyone else is down there. And he's just a proven head coach. All he's done is head coaching. It's the opposite of Jimmy Lake, right? So you know he has a program vision. You know he knows what he wants out of everything there. I think it's a really good, stable hire. And he's an offensive guy. And that's exactly what Washington wanted after having awful offenses the past 2 years.
So it's kind of like a K-State going for Chris Kleeman?
Yes, kind of. I would say that DeBoer has a little bit more bona fides, but Kleeman obviously worked out. And, you know, there were rumors that they were going after Matt Campbell at Iowa State. I don't know if I ever believe that. I think DeBoer is a great hire. He knows the area. Boom, you're done. On the coaching front, Joe Moorhead, Oregon's offensive coordinator, is taking the head coaching job at Akron. So they're in the market for an offensive coordinator, the same as CU. Jonathan Smith signed a massive extension at Oregon State. Go Beavers. And I believe there's no other openings that need to be addressed in the Pac-12. Herm Edwards is staying, shockingly, at least until the AD is also fired. But Herm Edwards is staying. And Arizona just made a switch.
Shit.
Looks like Chip Kelly saved his job by thrashing USC. And, you know, the Stanford's not going to move on for David Shaw unless they absolutely have to. So I think we're all
Deuce
done.
Deuce Vaughn is only a sophomore.
Yes, that's a Kansas State guy for those following along.
My favorite player in college football, by the way.
So I love following Coach Carousel. There's a bunch of jobs open in terms of Power Five jobs. All that's left, I believe, is Oklahoma now, LSU, and Virginia Tech. And Duke. I think those are the four that are.
Oh yeah, Cutcliffe is gone. Yes. Well, McIntyre, get on that Duke job.
Hey, that'd be a good hire for them. I'm not kidding. That'd be a good hire for them. So, anyways,
is that really the only are those really the only Power Five conference jobs available?
I believe that's true. I'm sure I'm missing one.
Did Texas Tech fill there?
Texas Tech is filled with Joey McGuire. Yes. Washington just filled. USC just filled. I'm missing ones, I'm sure. Florida filled with Billy Napier the past 2 days, which is a great hire for them.
Wow. I need to read who these people are because I have no idea.
Yeah, so I'll talk about you off air, but that's your general carousel roundup with a Pac-12 and CU tint. In terms of offensive coordinator hires, like I mentioned, Nebraska's looking for one in the same area code-ish, and Oregon's looking for one. They both presumably have bigger coffers to throw money at people with than CU, so they might not be in the same circles. But, you know, there's a lot of movement right now, so that presumably there's hopefully some candidates being vetted. On the CU side.
And it's mostly head coaches that are being hired from smaller jobs. Like, you don't see that many coordinators
getting promoted right now. Yes, not a lot of coordinators are moving around. That's exactly right. I don't know what to expect in terms of timing. I don't know what to expect in terms of profile. I have a preference, which would be a younger guy. But it sounds like some things have been said about the AD wanting a splash hire, which doesn't sound that young to me. So we'll see what that looks like.
Jimmy Lake, offensive coordinator.
Big fans here, offensive coordinator. Who says no?
Oh my God. I was watching the Broncos. So, like, I watched like some of the NFL that's more accessible for me. And oh my God, I've been watching the Broncos and I hate watching them so much. Their offense is horrendous. I hate it. And I have too many fantasy players. Just to give you an insight onto my team.
And thank you for that. That's exactly what we needed.
Thank you. Yes.
Before we close out the football grab bag, is there anything else you want to mention here?
Grab bag. No, my notes were Shiv News, Lincoln Riley, Mike Bone, Mel Tucker, B-ball win over Stanford.
Okay, so let's move to that. After a long break following their return from the Paradise Jam, the Colorado Basket Buffaloes have played the first conference game nationwide. This was the first conference game played by anyone all year by hosting Stanford at the, I guess now the CU Event Center, and that was on Sunday. And I don't know, that game was, it ended up being a pretty close win for the Buffs, 80-76. As many have this year, but Sam, I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at that or watch it. I will say
not really because the highlight packages are garbage and it's kind of hard for me to parse together what's going on.
Mm-hmm. They are garbage. And they're pretty short too. And let's see if any third party people have highlights while we're talking. But before I'll say I did watch the game. I was covering this game. And I can talk about as much as you want. We can do a fun thing we've done before, which is when you ask me questions and I can give you answers, or I can just go off.
Yeah. Who was good for the CU? What do they do good?
Who's good and what did they do good? Okay, those are pretty overarching questions. I'll go for it.
Let me tell you something I see from a box score, okay?
Okay.
Jabari Walker, double-double. Mm-hmm. One turnover, one foul. Great mm-hmm. job, Jabari.
Mm-hmm.
Evan Batty, 4 for 4 on three-pointers.
Yeah.
22 points, including passing the 1,000-point milestone.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like he did good. Luke O'Brien. I already texted you this one earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
His plus-minus was -7 in 4 minutes of play. So I think he did poorly.
I don't even know if he touched the ball, which might be a thing of him doing poorly. He took
1-3.
That was the end of half three. That was not his fault.
Okay. And then he took two free throws and missed one of them. And he got a rebound. So not a trillion. Thank you.
I can go through those. I think this is Jabari Walker's best game this year. I thought Jabari Walker was in control of his body and his movements for the first time this year. Like, he was completely, when he was driving, it wasn't just wildly going at the rim and throwing up a shot. Like, he was kind of playing the right pace. He settled for two beautiful mid-range jumpers because his shot is so smooth. That I thought were great because they left him open. He said, I'll take these shots. I don't have to go to the rim every time. Most importantly, still really, really good on defense. When the effort's there, his length really bothers teams. And like you mentioned, double-double. He is quickly entering in the like Tyler Bay, Roberson style sphere of just knowing that he's on the court. I think CU's going to get the rebound because he's always in the right spot and his arms are so long. And he just seems to be jumping at the right time. Even if he doesn't get the rebound, it's going to get tipped, you know, something like that. His rebounding sense is really amazing. So he was all over the court, boarding on both sides for CU, which is why part of the reason why I thought it was his best game. I thought it was just super in control. He didn't force any shots. He got the shots he needed to, and he just played defense and rebounding for however long he's out there.
Yeah, I mean, like, the one turnover and the one foul, like, that's unheard of for him.
Yeah, well, exactly. And Batty also did not have that many fouls. I will say, and I don't often say this, I thought that the officials were very pro-CU in this game. However, want to take that. Stanford had 13 fouls, and CU had 5 in the first half. Some of that was true, and some of that was calls I would not have made, even if it was against a CU player. But I'll take the help any way I can get it. No foul trouble, I think, for anyone on the team, really, against Stanford, which is huge because that has been an issue. Your second point, Evan Batty, crossed 1,000-point threshold, fourth player in that 2017 recruiting class to do so, which is obviously a record, 38th player in CU history to do so. But more importantly, I think his shot is not a mirage. You've seen some games this year. He likes to shoot some of those jumpers.
Yeah,
it's actually legit.
Why is he taking so many threes? Because, like, I see him, like, I've played basketball with Evan before, and he chucks a lot of threes and doesn't really make them that often. And that's, like, I realize he's not really trying in pickup, but I don't know.
No,
he doesn't seem like a natural shooter.
It's definitely improved. It's gotten way faster. I'll say his shot has gotten way faster. He's getting it up.
Yeah,
and definitely. So three of his threes were in one run. It was a 9-0 Evan Batty run by himself, whereas Stanford was up by 8 early in the first half, and they just ran the same play 3 times. I believe it was KJ Simpson, high pick and roll. Instead of rolling, Evan Batty just hung around the 3-point line. They both crashed with KJ. He just spun it back out, and he had wide open 3, and he just splashed him. And that's huge for the offensive spacing, I think, because when he's setting those picks and he can stay out there, there's no way for the defense to really win that, because now it's not as crowded in the lane. And with the quickness of KJ Simpson and Keyshawn Barthelemy, if they hesitate at all, they're going to blow right by that big guy. And it happened a few times against Stanford. So, his shot, I don't think, is a mirage. I think it's actually there to stay, and he loves it. He loves taking those. When he gets it on the block and then just turns and faces, he's done that a few times. And he likes doing that as well. But he took over on offense, which is good to see. And they didn't call fouls on him being big, which is also good to see. The refs often do that. Your last guy was who? Luke O'Brien? I'm not going to talk about Luke O'Brien.
Yeah, we don't have to. That was supposed to be funny.
Yeah, so let's talk about, I'll say some other things.
So KJ Simpson, has KJ Simpson been pretty good?
KJ Simpson was the best guard CU had against Stanford. Keyshawn had a semi-off game. His shot wasn't falling, a little bit too passive for my liking, but he hit all the free throws we needed him to at the end. He went, I think, 8 for 8 when Stanford was fouling. KJ was the best on offense. At least definitely better than Parquet and Keyshawn, and just he's so quick, and it's kind of like McKinley, where he's not afraid of contact and welcomes contact when he's going to the rim. So he got a few and ones off of that. His defense is still iffy, but you know, that he's a freshman guard, that's fine. And I'm trying to think of the other guards. Parquet was okay on defense, and on offense. He's still he's a guy that I would hope lets the game come to him. I you know, he didn't force anything, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. How's our defense looking?
Not great. it'll get there, I think. I think it'll get there, but the rotations are pretty rough. Stanford abused CU like four straight times on a baseline back cut, and just CU just forgot to do it. At Tad's post-game press conference, off the top of his head, and it's probably never a good sign for the player if the coach can mention three plays off the top of his head. But he mentioned three straight plays and the exact timing and where it happened on the court, where CU did the wrong rotation, and that's why Stanford got an easy bucket. And that's without film knowledge. So I'm sure that Taz is going to look through the film and find. I think he and us, we are all missing the super tight rotations the team had last year, where it seemed like every off-ball shooter had a guy, even if we were getting beat. So that's not happening this year. And some people will make him pay for that. I thought the on-ball defense was fine. You know, CU's guards have some quickness to them. I thought Tristan Da Silva did a really good job on Harrison Ingram, who's a five-star from Stanford, the leading scorer. And I thought Jabari did okay. But just the team defense is not there right now.
Yeah, I'm seeing 57% on twos, 42% on threes, 93% on free throws. And Stanford still lost because, turns out, they fouled CU a lot.
And it sounds like over so much.
And I was about to say 14 turnovers, and CU had five turnovers.
Yeah.
You don't see people complaining on Twitter when CU has five turnovers. So.
Yeah, the offense failed them out this game. And the offense and the refs. And to be fair, CU attacked the rim relentlessly. That's part of the reason why the refs called so many fouls. But it's kind of a good thing just because I think you know that Tab Boyle is going to get the defense and rebounding right. And if the offense is there and the defense and rebounding will get there, it's a dangerous team in February. But it leads to a lot of cardiac moments early this year. Too many.
Too many, but they're learning how to win close games.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter who. Against Montana State and against Stanford.
And Duquesne, who they went to overtime with after a furious 11 points to end the game.
That's exactly right. Go Dukes.
That's exactly right. But you would much rather them win these close games than to lose to Southern Illinois. Like, they're doing pretty solid. Like if they're going to be learning, you're pretty happy with them being 6-1 and about to be 6-2.
Yeah, I mean, look, Washington just lost to Winthrop at home by, I believe, 10-plus. So,
oh man,
there are worse places to be. There are worse places to be than CU sitting at 6-1 with a conference win. 7-1? 6-1.
Yeah, well, 6-2 because they're playing at UCLA in a couple days.
On Wednesday at UCLA. They see still no Cody Riley for UCLA, but that won't matter. I think CU's weakness is pretty obviously, in my opinion, the weakness is pretty obviously the wings. There's just no one that solid at the small forward position. Tristan Da Silva can kind of do it against some matchups. Jabari Walker can kind of do it against some matchups. Clifford is getting there, but there's really no one that I would – called rock solid.
Parquet should be able to check Juzang, but not like Juzang.
Okay, but we both know that's not who drives the UCLA offense.
Yeah, I know, but we don't have to talk. Yeah,
right.
You can say his name this time.
Johnny Juzang is the UCLA's gunner. He made his name in the tournament, but Sam and I are both very pro Jaime Jaquez guys.
Yeah, and I'm not. I don't really think Johnny Juzang's that good.
You and I both I agree on this. I think that I'm not a huge fan of gunners that just shoot no matter what, and he's that guy. And if he gets hot, great. But he's just gonna shoot him if he's not either. Jaquez is to me a much more important cog. He actually runs the offense, can play point out of the post, can play point out of the wing, can play point straight up. If you want him to, is super, super tough. We'll get all the boards, all the little things. And there's no one the CU has that can match up with that right away.
No, not really.
No.
Yeah, and not that it matters, because I don't think CU will be able to score on them too much.
Right. UCLA is going to be pretty good at team defense here. So, who would have thought early season test?
Who would have thought Mick Cronin was the perfect coach to go to UCLA?
I did not. I did not think that. I was not a fan. But it works, I guess.
It works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't worry. If in case you thought, oh, at least they, after UCLA, they'll have the experience and they can beat up on some other teams. Nope. Right after UCLA, CU plays Kansas at home. So get ready for that as well, because that is a dangerous Kansas team.
For UCLA?
No, CU plays Kansas.
No. CU plays Kansas later.
Yes.
Their next schedule is UCLA, then Tennessee at home.
I'm sorry. You're right. I mixed up Tennessee and Kansas. You're right.
And then Eastern Washington, Milwaukee, Cal State, Bakersfield.
Yes.
And Milwaukee has P.J. Baldwin, but do you know their record right now?
I'm going to guess, because you're questioning me, 3-3.
It's much worse.
Oh, no.
They're 1-5.
That's going to be a rough loss.
For CU?
Yeah.
Because P.J. Baldwin isn't as good as you think he is. Not right now. He's not like built to take over a team. He's like a secondary player.
Okay, that's good.
Like a really high level, like shooter, cutter, team defender. And he, or not really a team defender, because there was a clip of him playing defense where he literally didn't even try. He just took two steps to cut somebody off and didn't even go for it. And I think Jaylen Brown was a better college player than PJ. And I'm going to keep talking about this because you said Baldwin is better.
Okay.
I'm gonna keep track throughout this.
Reminding me, just to make sure.
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah, so let's go through this real quick. Yeah, after playing UCLA, after playing number 5 UCLA on the road, CU gets to come home to number 13 Tennessee, led by one of my favorite players this year, Kennedy Chandler. They are pretty good, and you know they will be physical. Right after that, they play an Eastern Washington team that just upset a tournament-bound Washington State roster. So that Eastern Washington team is no joke. Yes, they beat them in Pullman. Good Washington, Eastern Washington team. Then we play against UW-Milwaukee, who has a great player in Patrick Baldwin, despite Sam's slandering. But apparently they're a bad team, which is good. Moving on from that, you have the CSU Bakersfield, which is a pretty solid Cal State squad, but, you know, not the best. And then finally, you have Kansas coming to Colorado, and that is a stretch. We mentioned before the year, I believe we said, if you can get through those six games, 3-3, we'd be happy. Is that what we said, or 4-2?
Sorry, I was looking at the Eastern Washington has actually, they're 3-3 with losses to UC Davis and Texas State.
UC Davis, who just lost to a for-profit school at San Francisco. Did you see this?
I did not see
that. They lost to a real estate scam. UC Davis lost to a real estate scam.
Okay, so you said 4-2 out of the stretch coming up?
UCLA. That would be a stretch. I think 3-3. I'd be happy with 3-3.
3-3. Yes. Yeah. Happy. I'm happy with 3-3. If CU beats Tennessee, that'd be fucking great. I don't think they will.
No.
And I definitely don't think they're going to beat UCLA or Kansas. So I think 3-3 is the best. I think so far us being 6-1 is pretty solid. Like, I would have been surprised if we had started 7-0.
Yeah, CU was bound to drop one with this young team, and we mentioned it as such in our season preview with Ben Burrows. But I also think that'll go right back the other way. I think later on in the season, and maybe even earlier, CU is going to steal one that they shouldn't, because everything's cooking for these freshmen, and they are locked in, and something magical happens. Who's to say?
Speaking of for-profit universities, something I found out earlier this week. Two things, actually. I'm going to derail this real quick. The president of Liberia has his alma mater is DeVry University. That is George Weah, who was also the Ballon d'Or winner in 1994.
Yeah,
and the Ballon d'Or is being announced today, so that's timely. So a little wacky there. And then this is completely, completely out of nowhere, but do you know the name of the man who founded Gucci?
Is it Gucci?
It's not just Gucci. It's Guccio Gucci.
Oh, my God. Is that why they have the two G's interlocking?
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, so I've been telling everybody that fun fact today because it's so funny and I keep laughing.
Everyone, go see Hajiguchi. Everyone, go. I'm just kidding. I have no idea if it's good.
It sounds, I heard it's a train wreck, but I want to watch it. I want to watch it.
Okay, yeah. Before that, everyone, start your summoning circle for a good offensive coordinator. I will hopefully have my own hot board of what I'd like to see in the coming days, but everyone feel free to reply to us with what you would like to see out of the offensive coordinator. Sam, really
mailbag.
Quick.
Mailbag.
We, yes, tweet, mailbag.
Tweet at Jack Barsh your Do mailbag it. Questions if you've made it an hour into the pod. We've literally never done a mailbag before. It's because I don't want to say, tweet us your questions and get like one response. I think that would be so sad, and I've never had the courage to do it.
I just don't want to make my family sign up for Twitter just so they pretend that I can pretend that we have listeners, you know.
I have some fake accounts, although I deleted Twitter from my. I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I could do it for us. I could ask us some tough questions.
Thank you.
Who is the most handsome player on the CU basketball team this year?
It's not Luke O'Brien.
I think it is.
No. So let's really quick before we close it up. I don't want to reveal my basketball player type. I don't think in this public forum.
UBuffs roster.
We're gonna be done here in a second. I'm making executive decision. Before that happens, Sam, don't think, just shoot. Next offensive coordinator of Boulder is. Don't think, just shoot. Idea. Oh,
I don't know any names.
I was hoping you're gonna say something like Chuck Pagano.
Is he alive?
I think so. Living in Boulder, I believe.
Oh, okay. Good for him. Okay, quick shoot. Who do you think is the offensive coordinator?
Who do I think is going to be the offensive coordinator? Danny Langsdorf, current quarterback's coach, which would be sad. Oh,
that's boring.
I agree.
That would suck.
Who do I want the next offensive coordinator to be? Hey, Chris Peterson's just in studio doing nothing. Am I right?
I think Benon Urshak's pretty handsome.
There you go. All right. I'm closing up shop.
No, wait. Hang on.
Nope.
KJ Simpson and then Luke O'Brien. It would be one of those three.
Okay.
It has to be.
Yep. I'm done. I've been done for 5 minutes.
All right. I've been done.
I see ya.
Buzz! Buzz!